Welcome to the Natural Running Network. My name is Richard Diaz, and I'll be your host. What I hope to do is introduce you to some amazing athletes, luminaries from the sports science community, and as come to be expected, I'll also provide some highly opinionated rants on all aspects of endurance sport and my current favorite, obstacle course racing. So sit tight, grab a cup of coffee, and let's do this. I have the great pleasure, finally, to have Faye Stenning on the podcast with me, and really looking forward to this conversation. Faye and I have never met up until this point. We've had a chance to chat for a few minutes prior to this going live, and well, let's just bring him on. Faye, say hello to everybody.
Hi, everyone.
So, Faye, you were literally killing it all season long last year, and you know, I was fortunate enough to be at a couple of the events that you were out there rocking it. And my first question for you is, how healthy are you right now?
I'm pretty healthy. I'm pretty good with sort of staying injury free, other than a shoulder injury, which shoulders, it's been kind of hard to train the obstacle specific stuff with this injury, but I'm a firm believer that the good runners and the really strong aerobic tanks are winning these races. So I just feel happy that I haven't had any like lower extremity injuries in quite some time. So I'm feeling like really fit and really healthy in that sense. But this shoulder injury is just going to be one of those little nagging things that I think I'm going to probably have to deal with for the rest of the time I'm competing in this event. So, but yeah, I would say I'd give myself maybe a 9 out of 10 right now.
Nice. Well, it's early in the season, clearly. And I see that you haven't raced this year.
No. So like last year I was racing kind of at the beginning of the year, in January and stuff, just, well, it was cold in where I'm from and I wanted to get to some hot destinations. So I did like the SoCal, and did some fun races with my sister, and we had a girls' trip in Vegas, so I decided, oh, I might as well race in Vegas. So I kind of got swept up into doing all these races, which kind of worked to my benefit because I hadn't yet been signed on the pro team. So when they were making their decisions about who to sign, they could sort of see that I was doing well in these races, and then I got signed on the pro team. But this year, obviously, I have very you know, my goals are really specific to which races I want to peak at, and I don't want to spread myself too thin. So I've really like periodized my training around some key events. So yeah, I'm going to try and shorten up the season because I did find come October, I was really ready for it to be over.
So a comment you made opening up, and I wholeheartedly agree with you, the idea that these events are won by runners and the bigger aerobic machine is more likely to win the day. Would you feel that it's important for elite athletes to get on some pretty serious volume going into the season?
Yeah, I think so. I think that one of the most important parts of your training is just that base season. So just building that aerobic base so that long, slow distance, I think that just sets you up so that you can, you just are coming into the season a kind of a better athlete, and you're able to you're able to withstand your training. You're able to do 2-a-days and maybe even 3-a-days and not get quite so fatigued. A stronger aerobic athlete's always going to recover better. So just kind of starting the season with some good volume and then kind of ramping that up in a safe manner so you're not getting any injuries or anything. But having a really strong foundation, because once we get into race season, it's really hard to put those high volume weeks in because you don't want to take the risk that, you know, coming into a race with tired legs. So it's kind of like this is the right time to be ramping things up.
Now, I know that you ran cross country in college and school. Could you give me some numbers? I want to try to wrap my head around how fast you are. 5K times?
Numbers. Sure. Yeah, I mean, I was really good at a really young age and did super, super well. And I kind of struggled through university, but I was like a 9:47 3K. 17:06 or 09 5K, which isn't that good because my 10Ks that I ran this year, I think I split faster than that through the five. So my times aren't, I know I could run a lot faster. And then I've ran like a 1:21 half. But the times that I ran last year when I was OCR racing are by far better. I have a 35:40 or 35:50, 35:40 or 35:50, 10K. And that's probably, I'm sure if I raced a half and stuff, I'd be well under 120 and well in the 16s for the 5Ks. I just kind of hate the road. So even though I know I could get some personal best times, I just don't even want to go there. So, and I honestly don't think... I mean, having these fast road times is really great, and it looks really cool. But when you're looking at the top athletes in the sport, they don't have that great of road times. Like, I mean, Lindsay Webster's dominating, and I know she's not that quick on the road. So there's something to be said, I think, for specificity in terms of the trail versus the road. I know Ryan Atkins, he doesn't have anything crazy on the road, and you look at Ryan Woods, who has like a 13:45 on the road, but he's not dominating. So my point, I guess, is that the road times, I don't think they're as strong of an indicator of success in obstacle course racing as people maybe think.
I think that's probably a valid point. I was just trying to get a sense of where you've been, and you know, as a spectator watching what's going on, it's really tough because there's no splits that are coming back to you.
Yeah.
No sense of what the pace looks like.
Yeah, but that's what's so fun about racing it is. I used to go crazy when I ran track and even cross country with these splits and stuff. And I used to drive myself nuts, and I would find I'd give myself like panic and anxiety attacks in the middle of the race if I didn't hit my splits. So I do actually kind of really like that part of the racing. But it's hard, I think, to know where people are, and for coaches as well.
A couple other technical questions, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Do you spend any time tracking heart rate while you train?
No, I don't, which is crazy because I know a lot of my friends do, and like it's a big thing right now, but I don't at all. I kind of just go off perceived exertion, I guess. You know, I have my days that I want a 10 out of 10 workout, and then I have my recovery days that are 5 or 6, and then I have days that are 7, which are kind of in between. But I don't track heart rate, and I'm not very techy. Like, I don't, my watch doesn't even do anything except for a basic stopwatch, so I don't, which I was sort of starting to think this year maybe I should. But
well, you're not the only one. I know a lot of the elites, that especially those that have come up through track and field in university, they just never did.
And yeah,
that's not how they roll. But, you know, I mean, clearly, being in my business, I like to look at data.
Right.
I think that when you get to a place, this is just me talking, right? I think when you get to a place where you start to plateau and you're trying to find solutions, and then a lot of people, they'll either think, okay, so the missing ingredient is either volume or intensity. It's the two mm-hmm. things they could draw upon, where in fact, the metabolic pathway is just you're beating your head against the wall and you're getting good at it, and then you get to a place where it doesn't change anymore. And,
right.
And that just becomes one more thing to look at that might help mm-hmm. you to bust through that plateau. It's just spooky for guys and girls that are not used to having success with that type of approach.
Right. I think it'd be good, and just to look at certain workouts and your heart rate response to them, like that from last season to this season, to see some sort of indicators of improvement. But yeah, and I was thinking about this the other day. I'm like, hey, what am I going to do this year to get better? And I don't really have, because I haven't really kept track of anything, and I'm not super techy. I don't have like any data to really go from. So it can be hard to really pinpoint, just like you're saying, what I need to work on.
I wrote a piece a while back. I call it, training the dark side. And the concept of training the dark side was all about how to contend with this acidic nature of basically burning up with lactic acid. And I think that really is the holy grail of training. When you get to a place where you can manipulate that lactate production and turn it around and cause it to be your friend as opposed to being your enemy, then things get really entertaining. Mm-hmm. It just takes a lot of patience, and you have to have a lot of confidence that what you're doing is going to work because you're investing time, clearly, right?
Right.
It's just like trying to convince somebody to slow down to improve their aerobic potential. And they're and they're thinking, how am I going to slow down to go faster? And where, in fact, as they become more aerobic, they actually can produce more work, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, it's a leap of faith. And I think that the thing that I do is, because I've done it for so long now, when people follow the protocols, having tested them, it always ends up putting them in a better place. One day when you're out this way, you should...
Yeah, I would love that. I would totally love that. I've never actually even had, like, really testing done on anything, whether it was heart rate or VO2 max or aerobic threshold, whatever, any sort of test. I haven't had anything done. So that would be awesome. I would love that.
So going into the 2017, where do you expect you're going to show up first?
Last year I was second in the NBC series at every race except for Breckenridge. So this year, I'm just trying to win everything this year. Like, I want to win every single NBC race. I want to win every single race that's not an NBC race. I want to win Spartan World Championships. I kind of want to just win everything that I show up at. And, you know, I left my job in December this year, and it just came to a point, like, where I just was like, I don't want to finish the season and think that if I had, you know, a little bit more time or if I was a little bit more focused – that I could have done better. I've kind of did that in the past with track and cross country. I tried to take on too many things, and I always had that regret, you know, what if I gave it my all? What if I fully dedicated myself? So I've kind of made that decision, which obviously was hard when it comes to financial reasons, but I'm ready to just go out and try and win every single race I can.
Well, I expected you were going to say that. That wasn't the question. The question was, what is the first event you're going to show up at?
Oh, the first event I'm going to do.
I'd be disappointed if you didn't say you're going to try to win them all.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. No, I'm going to do San Jose in April. My first race was going to be April, like the first NBC one, which is the end of April in Seattle. But I know those races are super nerve wracking for me. So I just want to have one before that so I can kind of get the cobwebs off. And
right.
Yeah.
Cool. And I guess the logistics of you being where you are and the weather being what it is, how do you manage to get the training you need to get done?
Yeah, it's been really cold here and it's been hard. Previous years, I wouldn't go out in this weather. I would just, you know, take an off day or go swimming or go cross training. But I'm such a runner and I can't get a good workout cross training for some reason. It's just for some reason I'm the biggest slacker. Like, you put me on a bike and my heart rate will be like at 80 and it like won't go anywhere. So I've just said, like, screw it. I'm going to go out when it's really cold and just layer up. But it comes to a point that it's not that good for you. Like, I've gotten frostbite on my chin this year and that was peeling and the bottom of my ear. And so you just have to be okay with some days you are going to just have to miss training. And because it's so early in the year, I'm trying not to go crazy and let that really upset me. But yeah, some days they're just too cold to go outside and run. And that's kind of the phase I'm in right now, is mostly just running. So yeah, I just have a few more off days than I would like, but I'm hoping that serves me well later in the season.
So try to explain to me why it is that Canada is owning these events these days. I mean, you know, between Ryan and Lindsay, now you, Austin Azar has been doing really well. You Canadians are kicking our butts. What's up with all that? Especially given the circumstance. I mean, where I live is God's country for training. I mean, I was complaining. I was at the track this morning with my people, 6 o'clock in the morning. It was drizzling a little bit, but it was about 60 degrees. And that's a bad day for me.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I just think, and maybe I'm just biased, but I just think we're really tough here. Like, our conditions are brutal. And I mean, people were complaining about the Tahoe, the water and the swim in Tahoe, and like me and the rest of the Canadians were like, what are you guys talking about? Like, that's nothing. But I don't really know why we're better. And I would almost say, as much as I love Canada and I think that we're really tough down here, I think that it's just, it must just be a coincidence. Like, I just think that Ryan and Lindsay and Austin and myself, we're just we just happen to live in Canada. I don't think there's really any secret about being from Canada. But I will say, if you train out here for, you know, most of the year, when you come to Tahoe, that's nothing. That's not a big deal at all.
It's like home.
We also, yeah, we also have like the Rocky, like where I live and where Austin lives. We've got like lots of great. We got the Rocky Mountains there, and we've got like lots of good trail running and all that. So that helps. And maybe not being so distracted in like a big city with all the big city stuff going on, and maybe you're just a little bit focused. But I don't know.
We got some pretty cool places to train where I live. I'm by no stretch am I a city guy. I think we're enough removed, but we're like right at the heart of the Santa Monica Mountains. So,
nice.
Yeah, so we get to, well, for example, Saturday, usually on Saturdays, me and my group will go out to do some work in the canyons. And, you know, it's kind of nice. It's not real remote, but it, you know, it's decent. There's no altitude to speak of. But,
right. You know. Yeah. Oh, no, that sounds nice. No, I was training in San Diego for 3 weeks in December. And yeah, there are lots of nice trails. And it's just nice leaving your house in a sports bra and shorts and not having to worry about packing a whole bag of warm clothes.
Right. Have you thought about relocating to the States for the
Yeah, I have. And I like was so mad yesterday because I have temple runs on Tuesday. And I was hanging out with my dad, and I had just finished my tempo run, and I was so mad because my tempo run was like the loop that I do was like 2 minutes slower because you're running through snow and it's icy and you have to walk on some parts. And I got so frustrated because I just felt like, you know, it just wasn't a good workout because of the conditions that we have here. And I was so frustrated, and I was actually talking to him, you know, about moving somewhere. I know my sister's in San Diego, and I'd love to live there. I know Hunter and a bunch of people, and Nicole, who's a really good runner as well. They're all in Colorado. And for me, I get so bored training by myself. And I have a good group of guys to train with here, but they all work. So it's like meeting them at the lunch hour on their lunch break. And it's kind of tight for time. So I'd love to go somewhere and just really be around people that can push me. And
how's it working out so far? I mean, this relationship with Spartan and being on the pro team, you pretty happy about all that?
Yeah, no, it's going well. It's been great to be a part of the pro team, just for they really promote you as an athlete, and obviously getting to send you down to all these events and not having to worry about paying for all that is kind of what I need, especially for coming from Canada, which can be a bit pricey. Sure. So yeah, no, it's been good.
I know that there's going to be kind of a segregation in the sports. Either like, seems to me like it's either Tough Mudder or Spartan now. And I know a lot of the athletes have been looking at Tough Mudder. I believe Ryan has jumped ship and went off that way. And any scuttlebutt about that type of thing?
Yeah, no, I haven't heard anything from like Tough Mudder, and they haven't approached me or anything. But I don't know. I've done one Tough Mudder, but I just, for me, the types of races like don't really appeal to me. Just that 8 hours.
Yeah, it's long.
Events, like that's just too long for me. I still feel like part of my, although I'm an endurance athlete, like I do have that speed just from have running track for so many years. And I just think that if I had to train for an 8 hour event, for me, it would take away a lot of my enjoyment for it.
It's a different type of thing altogether. And I know that Hunter's been talking to those guys, and him and I have discussed it. The idea of gunning up for these long events, I think it's just really taxing on your body, especially when you're trying to make a living at the sport.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm not really in, even like in the Spartan, like the Ultra Beasts and stuff, I'm just kind of under the opinion that it's just, I don't believe it's that good pounding the pavement for that many miles for that long of your life. Like I just worry that in 20 years from now, even in 30 years from now, I still want to be able to run. And just the amount of mileage that you put on your body from doing these crazy events, I'm just not confident that I'd be able to continue this lifestyle well into my 40s and 50s. And it's something that I want to be able to do you know, for quite some time.
Well, let me just give you firsthand advice. It sucks to try to run well when you're 60 years old.
I would say run well. But, you know, be able to go out there and jog and not have a screwed up body.
I make jokes about it all the time. I get up pretty much 5 days, 6 days a week, and I give it a shot. And yeah. some days it works out pretty well, and some days it just sucks. But you got to just keep getting up and going out there and trying it. And I'm really lucky because in the course of my own personal education, I've been pretty good about not making a bunch of mistakes with my running.
Yeah.
I did make mistakes when I was young that cost me, and I ended up jacking my knees up for a while. Now, I'm not fast by any stretch of the imagination, but I can run, and I can run without pain. I don't have any knee problems or, you know, typical things you hear people talk about. So I'm pretty fortunate in that regard. But
yeah, and I would say that's totally my goal for when I'm your age, as long as I can be running and running healthy. Obviously, I don't have any time goals or anything, but just to be able to get out of bed and put on your running shoes and go outside and enjoy, you know, a few miles of running, I just think is just kind of what I live for. So I don't want to screw it up by running all these 8-hour events.
I just like to be able to wake up and open my eyes and see that I'm still alive and then work from there.
Right? Oh, good.
So talk to me about competition. Okay. Now, and I know that you and Lindsay have been like really, really neck and neck throughout the season last year. Do you guys talk about it? I mean, do you mess with each other a little bit, or how's the relationship?
No, I don't think so. And I don't, like, I think endurance sports is so a lot, maybe aside from Hunter, but like, we're so like, before the race, it's not like I don't even want to call it trash talking, but it's not like we're getting up in each other's faces or anything. We're just, and we don't really talk about competition. Like, it's not like Lindsay and I are messaging each other, even any of the other girls on the pro team. It's just very individual, and it's very, I don't like to even post many workouts on my social media page or even let people know what I'm up to. I'm very, very secretive. And I won't even train with my competition. Like, I like to keep it all kind of secret and quiet. I don't know why. I think that's just sort of my tactic. But yeah, no, we don't talk too much about competing or anything like that.
Do you ever think about what it is that they might be doing that could be problematic for you? I mean, do you think,
yeah.
Do you ask yourself like, geez, I wonder what she's doing this week, and should I be doing that too? Do you have that kind of thing going on?
Yeah, like I think I question like what she's doing, and maybe I should be doing some of that. But I know my body, and like, you know, she took Breckenridge Race off this year and wanted to just get some high volume training in and take that race off. And I thought maybe I should do the same. But I know my body, and, you know, I'm educated in the field. So I try and, you know, you only can control what you do. So I try not worry about what other people are doing. It may work for them, and everyone's body's different. But if it was like my choice, I wouldn't even have social media, and I would be totally just off the grid, because it does, you know, get to me when I'm seeing, you know, she's out doing these 8-hour long aerobic days and I'm only going out for 3 or 4 hours. And yeah, I can get a little bit out of hand, always trying to do more than your competitors, because you can see it every single day. I can see what she's doing. So it is a bit hard, but I just try and trust what I have planned out for me and trust what's on my program.
Right. Well, what works for you may not work for others, and vice versa. So it is an individual deal. It's up to you.
Yeah.
So how about your nutrition? You feel pretty good about that?
I give me a 2 out of 10 on nutrition.
Meaning that, yeah. You're like a seafood person, you see food, you eat it, or how does that
yeah.
work?
I am like, I probably eat very similar, I always say, to like a stressed out corporate man who works in an office all day. So it's like very much like, you know, I sleep in, and like, I get up and like I work out and I won't eat anything. Oh, no. And I run around all day, and I'll, like, stop at a coffee shop and grab, like, a coffee and a donut. And then I'm, like, jacked on sugar all day, running around, doing who knows what. And then I finally get home at the end of the day. I've been out all day just, you know, training and seeing my friends and shopping and this and that. And I get home, and it's, like, an explosion happens. It's, like, I'm cooking dinner, but I can't even wait for dinner to fully cook. So I'm, like, munching on like a baguette, and then I eat like probably like 5 servings of pasta, and then I have a small bowl of ice cream, and then I'm like watching a movie, and then I need movie snacks. Oh, man. So like it's so bad, but I'm really like I don't eat like an athlete. You know, I'm not like packing my vegetables and having all these frequent snacks and shakes and bars, but this year I'm really gonna try and change that. I just have more time on my hands that I'm not working, so I'm going to try and, like, prepare a lot more food. A lot of evenings I go out to eat, probably, like, 5 evenings a week, like, for dinners. So I'm going to try and stop that and just try and have more snacks available and just kind of make the time to eat better, because it's, like, it's completely brutal, and I try not to show too much of that part of my life on my Instagram page, because I feel like it's not supporting a healthy lifestyle, but I'm totally a normal person when it comes to food. And, you know, I like to have my wine, and I like to drink a little bit of beer here and there. And I don't know.
Well, don't worry. I'm not going to tell anybody.
Yeah, I know. It's so bad. But my boyfriend's a holistic nutritionist. So that's what's even more backwards about that is like,
he's dropping the ball.
Yeah. Well, when he first started dating, he was like all into like protein and fats and like not many carbs and like ate so clean. And then now that he's like running as much as I'm running, we're running like, you know, who knows, like 80 miles a week or something. And I'm dragging him out on all these runs. He's become a way worse eater because his body's finally like, you know, when you're working out that much, like you need carbs and you want pizza and you want some sugar and you want all those things. And I don't think it's necessarily terrible for you to have more of a high carbohydrate diet when you're working out that much. But his diet like completely changed, and he became actually a lot of a better runner from just changing his diet and actually focusing more on carbohydrates and that sort of thing. So we've both, he's kind of come a bit more like me, but I haven't really shifted closer to him, which I think I probably need to.
Well, I think there's going to be a fine line that we need to tread here. I don't think he wants to be like you, and I don't think you want to try to be like he was. You need to kind of figure it out. And one of the things that I've done that I'm pretty pumped up about over the course of the last year, you know, I've been touring around the country doing my run clinics, and we always preface the clinic by doing metabolic testing. And this is usually a really serious wake-up call for most of the people that we meet, because number one, that it never occurred to them to take a look at the way their body requires energy.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that resting metabolic assessment, we're able to show people how poorly they're feeding and how much they need relative to what they thought they should have got.
Totally.
And yeah. I did that test. I mandated the test on Hunter just, the same day that you saw that video that we put up. We didn't show the resting test, but I did a resting test on him first. And we figured out that his staple diet should be about 5,000 calories daily. That's
wow.
That's assuming he doesn't do anything crazy. That's assuming that he only did like 1 hour of relatively intense work. And as you know, he's probably putting in 2 to 3 times that on average.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost mind-boggling to try to figure out how many calories he might get.
Right.
And I looked, you know, because I test the women and some of the athletes in the sport. And to give you an example, had a girl the other day, she probably ran about 125 pounds, pretty lean, and her caloric requirement, just assuming again about an hour workout, was about 3,500 calories.
Right.
And, you know, when you're thinking about, you know, the whole taboo of carbohydrate intake that everybody feels like they're going to make you fat. So they don't want to eat carbs, and they're not getting enough energy in from the protein. And clearly, most people are going to shy away from fats. They just don't get enough food.
Right.
And or the timing, you know, not eating appropriately over the course of the day and going into workouts without any energy. And it's a nightmare.
No, it is. And, you know, it's especially for females, I find, you know, females have this sort of stranger relationship with food. And what I find is if I'm not eating enough, like I turn into a crazy person. Like it's so like food not only allows you to train at higher intensities, but it keeps you like sane. Like I've gone through some really high volume weeks and I haven't fed myself properly. And like I turn into an emotional wreck. And it just goes to show that the impact it has on like your from a hormonal level is huge. Yeah. So yeah, that's I think those tests are great to just know what you're burning and what you require. And I think I probably eat enough food, but I probably eat like 600 calories from when I wake up till dinner time. And then I probably eat 3,000 calories from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m.
Yeah, trust me, we need to talk.
Yeah.
The first thing you said to me, and it was almost funny because it wasn't really the question. I said, so where are you going to be show up first? And you said, well, I want to win all the races I do.
Yeah.
And when you think about all these little tricks that you try to pull into your training program, whether it be the new supplement or the new training kit, you know, whatever it is, whether it be, you know, the sandbags or this or that or the other thing that you use to try to bump up your training, the thing that's like staring us in the face is making sure that we're fed properly over the course of the day so our bodies can respond to the training we expose it to.
Right.
And you get that sorted out, and that's about, if I had to put a figure on it, I'd say it's about a 35% edge over almost anything else you would try to do, to include putting on more volume in your training.
Right. Wow. Yeah. No, it's definitely something that, because it gets to a point, you get to a certain level, and I'm like, okay, what am I going to do this year to be better? And it's like, okay, like, I mean, I'm sleeping like 10 hours a night. I'm training multiple, 3 times a day. I've quit my job. Like what? That was like the one piece that I was like, oh my goodness, this is the only thing that I'm not doing. And I, you know, made that commitment to myself this year that I was going to do everything I could in my power. And food is definitely something that's in everyone's own hands. So
you got to get down here. You got to get down.
I do.
You got to get down here at least once. I promise you, you'll walk away, you'll be spinning. Your head will be spinning with, oh no, I better do this, I better do that.
Yeah, no, I think definitely a trip in the sometime soon for sure.
So we're going to go crush everybody this year. Do you have somebody's face on your refrigerator that, you know, every time you wake up, you need that motivation? I know she'll be doing it if I don't. Do you have that, or are you just like, you're self-empowered?
No, I don't. I don't use any like motivation tactics, I don't think. I and that's because I actually just like really like training. So even if I wasn't competing, I would still be training. I just enjoy it. I probably wouldn't be doing some of the workouts that I have to do. They'd probably be cut in half if I wasn't competing. But for the most part, I just get up every morning and I have good energy and I usually feel really good and I'm excited to go train. And I don't really need to, like I said, even if there was no competition, I would still be doing my tempo runs and still be feeling fit because it's just, it's what I enjoy to do.
What distance do you prefer?
I actually like the super. I would say I'm best at the Beast. But I prefer the super races. Like, I like that half marathon, you know, out there for 90 minutes. Because I find that I can, whereas a Beast, from you have to really slow down and really be cautious. And then a sprint, I find, just stresses me out too much because it's so quick. And then if you fail an obstacle. But I like that, like, 90 minutes, I find you can still work out at you can still work at a pretty high intensity and not have to be overly concerned about fueling and pacing yourself, but it's still long enough that it draws out some of those, you know, really kind of those powerhouses.
Yeah, I think that that's probably In that super range is probably about the best place to target from being a wholly successful athlete, I guess is the term. Because if you have good 10K speed, you can gun up for a half, and it's not so far away from speed that you could also do well in the sprints.
Right. And just the training, you know, you can do a 2-3 hour long run. You're not having to do like a 5 hour long run, and you can still do some fun like quarter mile repeats and them still be pretty useful for your events. So you kind of get a touch on a whole range of different workouts, which I like as well.
Let's talk about your coaching business.
Sure.
It's called Grit, right?
Yeah, Grit Coaching.
And you are partnered with another young lady that is also a pretty accomplished runner.
Yeah, so I partnered with my good girlfriend, Jessica O'Connell, who's an Olympian. She went to Rio in the 5,000 track event. So her and I partnered, and yeah, we just started this sort of online coaching business. And we have a few tiers, just depending on what level of interaction you require kind of with us. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun to kind of, you know, it was the first website I've made and designing all this stuff. So it was a challenge, but it's up and running, and we have, I think, 7 or so clients now, and we're hoping to build that. But it's been a lot of fun for us just to meet a whole bunch of different athletes, from everyone trying to run ultra events to trying to, you know, break 30 minutes in a 5K. So it's been neat sort of seeing all the different levels of experience and trying to tailor our programs to kind of fit with everyone's sort of need.
Hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting business. And I think it's getting to be kind of the go-to business for a lot of the athletes. I'm seeing, a lot of the elite athletes are starting to put up their own training sites. And I don't know. It's a lot of work. I do this myself, and I'll tell you what, it's consumed me. I am busy with it every day, from the time I get up in the morning to the time I go to bed. I'm dealing with my clients.
Right, and that honestly has sort of become a little bit of a worry for me, to be completely honest, because as much as I want, you know, to have a business and to help other people, like, I have so many goals myself that require so much time and so much energy. And I'm just hoping that I can juggle the two and be a good athlete, but also a good coach, and make sure that I'm giving everyone, like the people, the time they need. So if it becomes too kind of overwhelming, I might have to slow down. But right now it's great because I'm not racing and I do have some time on my hands. So it's been fun.
Cool.
And it's just fun meeting all these different athletes, which is kind of my favorite part, talking to everyone. And
yeah, that's kind of interesting. Like I told you, I just had got off the phone. We're off Skype before we got on with one of my clients in Zimbabwe, Africa. And so I've got clients in Africa, Singapore, Barcelona, Australia. They're all over the world. And it's kind of fun just to have conversations with these people and, you know, get a sense of the type of environments and circumstance that they contend with their training.
Mm-hmm.
I have to share this with you because I share it with everybody. I think it's funny. So on a bad day, I told you that 60 degrees drizzle, you know, it's like, oh gosh, should I go out there? Right?
Yeah.
My client in Zimbabwe runs, her and her husband run a bush camp. And they take people out on safari. And she's an ultra trail runner. And I'm writing program for her. And I'll say, okay, I want you to do this on Tuesday, this on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever. And she'll come back to me and say, well, look, I can't train on these 2 days because I'll be in Big Five country. And Big Five means all the 5 large animals that will kill you, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so like we're talking about hippopotamus, we're talking about lions, we're talking about, you know, leopards, elephants. I don't even know what's all on the Big Five. I think water buffalo is one of those. And so I'm having a conversation with her. I said, so, you know, it's kind of interesting to hear you talk about the idea of having to deal with these monstrous jungle creatures while you're training. But where you live, when you get out and do what you do, is there anything you need to concern yourself with? She goes, well, of course there's the Black Mamba. And she goes, as you know, Black Mamba is the most poisonous snake in the world. And they grow to be, what'd you say, 3 meters.
Oh my goodness.
So they're like 9 feet long. And they could stand up on 20% of their length.
Oh my God.
And they're predators. So if you're like running down a trail and they hear you coming, they will like attack you. And they're 9 feet long. And she gets out there and does it.
Oh my goodness. That's terrifying.
I've had her tell me that I had her scheduled to do some hill repeats. In the area she does the hill repeats, there's lions and elephants. So she said she'll have her husband drive the Jeep behind her. So if there's there's a problem, she can jump in the Jeep.
Oh my, that is dedication. Wow.
But here, it's drizzling.
Yeah, and you're 60. Worried about a little rain.
Anyway.
That is crazy. The only thing we have to worry about with animals here is bears. And I just run with bear spray. And I feel sort of safe. But that's crazy. Wow.
Do you see bears?
It seems like no one's afraid of them here. I'm terrified of them. And there has been recent attacks. But I run with bear spray all the time. And I, you know, usually you just stay in packs of guys. But, you know, sometimes the boys will leave me or sometimes, and I just get so mad because I'm so frightened to death of them. But it's actually like kind of helped my training because I have to keep up with these guys. Like I can't be in no man's land. So it's like as soon as we start running, it's like, okay, I have to hang on for dear life. Or if I slow down and I'm by myself, like I get too afraid. So some runs, you know, you're running with everything you have just to stay with the group.
Nice. Well, just put a Black Mamba on the trail and see how you feel.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's crazy. I can't believe that length. Holy.
So let's tell people how to find your coaching site so that we can get you a little business here.
Yeah, so you just go to www.gritcoaching.net. Cool. And we also have an Instagram page, which is Grit Coaching. And yeah, check out our website and you just got to send us an email and... Yeah, from there, we'll just set up a Skype call with you and sort of see what category you fit into and start writing you guys programs. So
nice. Very cool. Well, look, I'm so glad we had a chance to talk. And I'm looking forward to getting you down here and, you know, giving you a little bit of what we do here. So you'll need therapy when you realize how much food you should be getting.
Yeah. I'll be broke just with the grocery bills.
Yeah. Well, you know, you... Just get your boyfriend to cook for you. You know,
yeah,
this whole idea of being a holistic nutritionist and he's not throwing down for you, that's just not good.
I know. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. Yeah, I'll definitely have to come down, get some testing done. I'd be so interested.
And I know you hate treadmills, but we'd be happy to see whether we get you to do these 22, 23 mile an hour repeats on the treadmill.
Yeah, I'll make an exception.
All right, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you
soon.
Thank
you.
Well, friends, it's time to bring another show to a close. Be sure and tune in to us next week. We've got a lot of great content in store for you. I want you to tell your friends to check us out. You can always find us on Facebook. Simply go search the Natural Running Network. Drop us a message. I'd love to learn more about you and the things you do. And until then, you have an amazing day.